You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24. This week, we hear the story of Brooks Wrights, the man who's building an empire of award-winning eateries in Charleston, South Carolina, from the much-loved Leon's Oyster Shop and the soon-to-open Italian restaurant Melfi's to Little Jack's Tavern, just days ago named one of the best new restaurants in America by Bon Appetit magazine. And if that wasn't enough, throughout it all, Brooks has run a fast-growing startup, Jack Rudy Cocktail Company. So how do you do it all? Brooks shares his rise in the restaurant world and what he's learned.
I studied English and drama, so I wanted to be a writer, probably from 12 on. Then when I got into college, that shifted a bit. I wanted to be a playwright, screenwriter and playwright. I got a job in college bussing tables, and that led to bartending and serving and such. And honestly, what drew me originally was just I liked the energy of a restaurant and it was good money. So that was, it was sort of purely that. The moment when it really clicked for me is my first trip to New York. So I grew up on a farm in Kentucky, saved up some money in college, and went to New York by myself on a school vacation. And I went to Balthazar, and it was so cinematic and so transportive. It clicked with all of the sort of writerly instincts in me. And the fact that you could create a world like that through a restaurant is really what I sort of realized in that moment, like, wow, I don't actually have to go and try to be a playwright because that's frankly impossible to do it successfully. I could be in the restaurant business and create that same world for people. And that was the moment. And from since then, it's been, I truly believe I'm doing what I was meant to do and what I love. The day after I graduated, I went to school in Lexington, Kentucky, and had worked at the same restaurant all through college. I moved to Louisville, which is the biggest city in Kentucky, and I went to work at a restaurant called Proof and committed myself from day one. I was hired as a server, but I said, I want to do more. I want to learn how to manage a restaurant, you know, because I didn't go to school for that. And that was the first real piece of the puzzle that set me down that path. And so within 6 months, I was managing there as an entry-level daytime manager. And at the end of my time there, I was there for about 4 years, I was the general manager. So I sort of worked through the ranks, learning how to write a schedule, how to manage costs, labor, serve food, you know, just sort of you name it. That was a crash course for 4 years. I went to university for restaurant management in a way. I really got lucky because I was serving and bartending, and then the kind of the lowest level manager left. He was a daytime kind of lunch manager, and I raised my hand, and of course I'm only like 22, 23 at this point, and said, hey, I'm interested in that job, even though I have no experience. And the folks who were in charge said, well, you know, I mean, what's the worst you can do in, you know, our lunchtime business? So yeah, we'll give you a shot. But I was a smart person. I was hardworking, wasn't partying a lot. I was really committed to it. So I invested myself in that role. And then the next person above me left, and I raised my hand again. I said, I know I may not be ready for this role, but I would love a shot. I'll give it my all. They gave me the shot. And then about 2 years in, the general manager left. I mean, that was a really high-profile job, especially in that town. It was probably the best restaurant job there was. And I was 24, 25 at this point. And I said, yeah, I'm going to be in over my head, but I would love the chance. And that job, I mean, it kicked my butt for several years, but I learned so much. I mean, I learned how to run a busy, successful restaurant, which totally equipped me with the skill set I needed to go and open a place of my own one day. So I was working in Louisville, and my eyes were kind of on bigger cities. So I had felt like I had absorbed a lot of what was to be learned in that job, and I was sort of looking for the next step. And my eyes were on Charleston, South Carolina, because it was getting a lot of press. I was reading a lot about the food scene there, and I knew it was a fun place to live, and it was near the beach. So it had kind of this perfect combination of like lifestyle balance, but also professional development opportunity. So I moved to Charleston, relatively sight unseen, without a job, and I applied at one place. I sent my resume to one restaurant called Fig, which was the leader of the new Charleston, you know, it was the first quote-unquote farm-to-table restaurant in Charleston. I sent my resume to the owner, and oddly enough, his girlfriend was from Louisville, and he knew the restaurant where I was from. So he called me in for an interview, and he said, look, you've got a lot of experience. You know, you're young, but you do have good experience, but we're a small restaurant, and I'm the general manager. So I'll give you a job serving if you'd like, but you're not going to, you know, come in here. We don't need a manager. And I said, great, I'm happy to be a server, and I'll start from the bottom. Similar situation unfolded. The bar manager left. I became the bar manager. The assistant general manager left. I became the assistant general manager. And then 3 or 4 years down the road, Adam, who was the owner, he said, while we do the sort of groundwork for this new place, you can be the general manager of Fig. So I was the general manager there for about a year. Then I left to go open their new restaurant, which was an oyster house, a seafood restaurant. That was big, buzzy, awesome place, and that was really what started to plant the seeds for my first restaurant, which is Leon's. You're constantly looking at every little piece, you know. It's everything from, is the trash can that's in the restroom the right trash can right now? Or does it not fit enough hand towels? And is the soap the right soap because it smells a certain way? And, you know, is the light bulb in the light fixture the right bulb? And all these things, this crazy alchemy that you've got to get right. I always joke with my wife, I feel like Woody Allen. I'm afraid to read any reviews, and I go into every new project thinking, this is terrible, no one's going to like it, and no one will show up. And she's sort of constantly assuring me, no, you know, you've got a touch. People love it. People love what you do. I believe that every day is the day when no one shows up to the restaurant. So I suffer from that greatly, I would say. Jack Rudy began in Kentucky when I was at Proof, and it sort of developed side by side with my own professional development until I launched it as a real brand. But the story of the development of Jack Rudy began in Kentucky because as I was managing Proof, we had a very large spirits collection. And specifically the gin, we probably, obviously here in London, you go to a bar, there's 52 gins. You know, we had 15, which at the time was incredible for the States. You know, I had known of the big brands, Tanqueray and Beefeater, but I was exposed to all these new gin brands, and it was really cool because I love gin and always have. And so what I realized is our customers were fascinated by all these new gins. They were ordering them, and then we were dumping tonic from a soda gun into, you know, the same place where the Coke was coming and the Diet Coke and the Sprite. It was all coming out of this little nozzle. And so I sort of felt like there's got to be, if somebody's willing to pay $15 for a high-end gin, they're probably willing to pay a 75-cent upcharge for a crafted, well-made tonic. So I started making my own tonic in the restaurant, not calling it a brand. It was more, at that point, it was kind of an extension of the bar offerings. It wasn't anything affiliated with me. It was just sort of our house tonic. But it resonated, and people loved it. So we continued to make it. It became an important part of the offerings. And so when I moved to Charleston and I started the bar management position at Fig, I said to the owners, I said, look, I made tonic back in Kentucky. It was a success. I'm going to do that here and offer that as an upcharge to our whatever, you know, house offering was. And they said, yeah, sure, cool, sounds good. I did it. It resonated again. The big difference was in Charleston, we have so many food tourists that are there looking for food experiences. And when they would have the product, they would kind of ask their server, like, where is this from? How do we buy this and take this back to, you know, wherever they live? And the server would come to me like, hey, you know, table 23, they want to buy some of the tonic. Can we sell it to them? And I'd say, yeah, I'll put some in a quart container and, you know, charge them $5 or whatever. And that happened enough times. And I said, okay, well, if this is happening in this little world, this little of this restaurant, and, 10% of our customers are buying some every night, then if I multiply that by the city or the state or the United States, there must be some interest in this kind of product. And that's when I said, okay, well, this is a good opportunity for me to create a brand, which will be a fun exercise, is something I enjoyed doing, an entrepreneurial sort of venture, something of my own that's not related to some business someone else owns. And so I created Jack Rudy, which was named after my great-grandfather, and very much looked to his kind of heritage and his background and his history. Next thing you know, as these things go, you know, we served it to someone who was a distributor who was based in Virginia. They loved it, wanted to pick it up. We started selling to them. They took it into new territories. Now, 8 years later, we're across the U.S. I mean, I think it's in 42 states. And now, of course, we're international, which is what brings me to London. It was nightmarish to start a company while managing someone else's restaurant. And I think it was just good old-fashioned by the bootstraps startup mentality, which is I'm going to work on this business in the morning before I go to work. I'm going to go to work, come home, not go out, not go party. I'm going to come home and I'm going to work on this until very late. And I'm going to start over the next day. And I was making it in my apartment. I was packing boxes in the dining room and just totally bursting at the seams in the house until I just couldn't do it anymore. And then found a bigger facility and then a bigger facility. And then finally, you know, it got to the point where I just couldn't support it any longer. And I found someone to co-pack it, to produce it for us in a facility that I no longer own. I come across a lot of folks who are in their early 20s, where I once was, wanting to do things that are similar to what I've done. And I mean, I think I have a lot of advice for them. You know, my first thing is just remain open-minded throughout any work experience and absorb everything, because you can really see what other people, what works for other people and what doesn't work, and absorb that like a sponge, you know, and constantly raise your hand, not demanding more responsibility, but just reminding your superiors that, hey, you know, I am open to doing more. And it's not even, for me, it was never about money. It was about the experience. I never once asked for a raise. I just wanted the knowledge. You can open a great restaurant on an island off the coast of Seattle, and someone will find you. It's like Food & Wine now moving to a lot of their offices to Birmingham, Alabama. It's because the nexus of food and media to some degree is now kind of everywhere, and the landscape has changed so much. I still find it essential to travel to New York and to London and to Los Angeles to see what's happening, because this is still the epicenter, these places. But I think if you can balance that and find a community to call your home where you can bring what you've found, filter it, and make sure it's appropriate for your audience, then you can really get a winning combination.
Thanks to Brooks Wrights for today's episode. Eureka's back again next Friday, but before then, tune into The Entrepreneurs on Wednesday. This show is edited by Christy Evans. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. Thanks for listening.